alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, how should Muslims tackle the hate crimes committed against them?
A rise in the number of hate crimes against Muslims in London is being encouraged by mainstream politicians and sections of the media. A study written by a former Scotland Yard counter-terrorism officer suggests. Attacks ranging from death threats and murder to persistent low-level assaults, such as spitting and name-calling, are in part whipped up by extremists and sections of mainstream society. The report provides empirical evidence to demonstrate that assailants of Muslims are invariably motivated by a negative view of Muslims they have acquired from either mainstream or extremist national reports or commentaries in the media. The study states it was the prosecution and presentation of the war on terror by governments and the media that prompted an outbreak of anti-Muslim street violence. Islam and Life will investigate how should Muslims tackle the hate crimes committed against them.
This is a very important question. The whole atmosphere in Europe, in the West, around the Islamic question or the question of Islam is just spreading around a feeling that Islam is not welcome and that the Muslims are new citizens and maybe the others, and sometimes the targets of racism in the European countries, in Britain, as in France, as in Germany. These days we are hearing about stories where Muslims are targeted. They are facing hate crimes. They are facing racism and Islamophobia. So we cannot disconnect this and this situation from the whole environment in the West, where Islam is perceived as a threat, where there is a great deal of mistrust, where the Muslims sometimes feel that they are not welcome and they are not equal citizens as all the other citizens. They are asked questions that are not the same as their fellow citizens. This is the very important and critical question, not only for Muslims, by the way, but for the future of the Western countries. If we are serious about equal citizenship, living together in a positive atmosphere and contributing to the future, we have to come to this perception and try to solve the problem and what should be the contribution of the Muslims when it comes to their rights, when it comes to their contribution and their presence in the West. So, well, to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Professor Jonathan Gittens-Mazur, co-director of European Muslim Research Center and co-director of Exeter Center for Ethnopolitical Studies in the Department of Politics. Thank you so much for being with us. You have written, studied the whole situation of Muslims and the hate crimes against Muslims in the UK, also having also studied the situation in Europe. I think that, as I was trying to say in the introduction, it's very difficult to disconnect what is happening on the ground with Muslims facing not only discriminations, but something which has to do with, you know, being killed and being targeted for the only reason that they are Muslims. What is the state of affairs today in our societies?
Well, thank you very much for having me on today. It's a great pleasure to be here. I mean, I think there's different ways of thinking about the current state of affairs. There's kind of a high-level way of thinking about it. By high-level, I mean at this kind of elite policy-making, the way that politicians use rhetoric, use subtle anti-Muslim expressions or phrases or kinds of policies and ways of thinking about it. I think there's also a degree of discussion which is really base, which is really unnuanced, which is really quite disgusting in the media, also that likes to portray Muslims in one way, and that's not necessarily reflecting a reality. And then there's the reality of people that express everyday forms of either mental or physical abuse on the street. People that get spat at, women having veils tugged at, small snide remarks about the way people dress or what people believe. And the thing is, it's very complex to actually disentangle these different levels. Because on the one hand, we have politicians that talk about terrorism or, you know, foreign wars or these kinds of things. That trickles down through a very simplistic media message and justifies, people use as justification why they won't like Muslims when they walk into the shop. And so you get this very problematic feedback loop from top to bottom and kind of back up again.
Yes, I think it's quite important to get the three dimensions that you are talking about now. It's not only what we have in the streets, it's the whole environment also, and the discourse and the speeches and the way the Muslim presence is understood, and Islam, in fact, is perceived from a Western perspective, not getting, in fact, the message that Islam is a Western religion already. So there are many levels. Now, how would you explain the causes and the effects on the ground? Because many people are saying, okay, no, it's just a new type of racism. It's not new, in fact, because we had it before. Still, there is something which is a transnational phenomenon everywhere in Europe, is this campaign day in, day out about the question of Islam in the West. How do you connect all this?
I mean, I'm thinking of two kind of key aspects here. The one is, for example, a lot of the debate. I didn't start off as a researcher that looked at Islamophobia. I started off as a researcher that looked at quote-unquote radicalization, a term which I'm still not quite sure what it means. I'm pretty sure I know what it means when the Daily Mail uses it or when the Sun newspaper uses it. I'm not entirely sure what it means when other people use it. But what was really quite striking to me in doing that particular research was the way that if someone in pursuing their faith, in their belief, in practicing their faith, if they felt that this inspired them to become politically active, it was the way that the term radicalization was being used then to say, you're dangerous, you're not moderate. It was a label. It was a label so that if you found strength to be politically active because you observed, you were an observant Muslim, therefore you were a problem. Now, what's more interesting for me, and that I think is interesting in of itself, and really indicates the level of misunderstanding of the role of Islam within contemporary European society, but also what it means to be Islamist or politically inspired to participate in protests or in picking up the rubbish off the corner or worrying about your school because of your faith. And that's one set of questions. But what's also then interesting for me is the way that democratic values aren't then applied equally. And I think this harks back to an earlier form of colonialism, that somehow Islam is pre-European or pre-Enlightenment, or Muslims somehow need educating to be made into better citizens. Much of this discourse, which we found in early aspects of prevent policy and counterterrorism policies and so-called community cohesion policies, as though Muslim communities somehow aren't mature enough or able enough to actually engage in everyday kinds of politics. And so you get this very peculiar thing, because on the one hand you have a kind of form of Orientalism that Islam is the other, it's not compatible with liberal democracy, and then you have a securitization, and not only is it not compatible with democracy, but somehow it's automatically going to lead to terrorism. And this has been the kind of maelstrom in which we find ourselves, a really problematic coming together of a post 9/11 world and an ignorant world that really just fundamentally misunderstands what it means to be Muslim and politically active, or Muslim and not even politically active.
So before coming to the fact that we have on the ground, you know, the hate crimes and the figures maybe and the rates, what is happening? Because quite clearly it's growing, increasing, and the situation is becoming quite bad in some regions around Europe and in the UK. Before that, what would you say about the responsibilities? Who is responsible for that? Are we talking about the media that are spreading around the perception that at the end of the day you end up thinking that your neighbor who is a Muslim is going to be a threat, and then you just act in such a way? The media, the politicians, the intellectuals, and where does it come from? Who are the people who are at the end of the day nurturing this sense that Islam is first a dangerous religion and Muslims a threat for our democracies?
Look, I love living in Britain. I think it's actually a very good society to live in. Mm. But, you know, how many British people have actually a Muslim even for a neighbor? And so what you find is everyday people going about their everyday lives. The only information they have about Islam is what they read in the Daily Mail, what they see on the TV. The greatest example of this was when ITV wanted to find a representative Muslim figure. They went to Anjem Chowdhury, the head of Islam for UK. They didn't go to a normal person in the street. They went to the most vociferous, some might say the most off-kilter individual possible. And this in some ways creates a picture by which everyone, you know, these are the kind of snapshots by which people understand Islam. So there's this issue, and there's a 24-hour media issue as well, where there's a constant pursuit of a story. There's no nuance, there's only headline. No one reads beyond the kind of initial hit. No one really wants to unpack these things. I also think there's something peculiar that happens, which is, you know, we study these terrible stories about people being beaten up, pigs' heads being placed in front of mosques, you know, crazy people stockpiling weapons and threatening to blow up mosques. But when one introduces the term Islamophobia, you get an incredible reaction. And the reaction is to say, well, Islamophobia means we can't critique Islam.
Yeah.
Or the other thing is Islamophobia, let's talk about Israel-Palestine. And so you get this kind of inability to actually meaningfully have a deeper discussion about why it is that society doesn't know anything about Islam, why it is that the media will only portray it in one way. And it either deviates into, oh, you're an apologist for all things good and bad about Islam and Muslim communities in Europe, or, oh, you must feel a certain way on Israel-Palestine. Both of which are total distractions. Those aren't the things that really will help us either understand why it's okay to call a Muslim in the street a name, or why it's okay to spit at a woman wearing the veil, which is really a significant problem. And that's in some ways, I feel slightly let down by the media and by politicians, because they won't focus on that issue.
Yes, I think that there is quite clearly a lack of courage to just to say, look, we are just avoiding the discussion. What you are just trying to explain now and describe, this is the reality. It's as if we are distracted from talking about what is happening. We say, okay, if you mean this, you are an apologist, or you are naive, or you are supporting the Muslims, whoever they are, and in fact, sometimes even supporting, you know, radicals and violent extremists is something that is that we have now as something which is we can call it a meta narrative. It's just beyond even before we start talking about the issue. Now let us come to the facts and figures. You have written a report about what is happening. It was mainly about the UK. Okay, what is happening in the UK? We are witnessing quite exactly the same around the European countries. Sometimes, depending when and where, we have a very bad situation and very bad hate crimes against Muslims in France, for example, in Germany, depending on the climate and the atmosphere around. What are the figures that you have? What is really happening on the ground that we have to be aware of, just to get a sense of the gravity of what is happening?
Well, one of the problems is there is no statistical pool to go to. And one of the things is, whereas, for example, the London Metropolitan Police are very good at keeping exact records of different forms of hate crime, so anti-Muslim hate crime, homophobic hate crime, domestic violence, all these other kinds of figures they keep in a specific pile. Many other police forces in the UK don't disaggregate these figures. So we don't even really quite know. Now, what also happens is when you try and go into communities, when we go to London, people are either familiar with our work or familiar with these ideas. But one of the things that we found was going out into other parts of Britain, people get very uncomfortable in talking about Islamophobic attacks. And they get uncomfortable for several different reasons. They get uncomfortable because they don't really want to make local trouble, because the local council tells them, don't make a big deal out of it, it'll go away. way, because there's a because in a post-prevent world, in a post-7/7 world, there's also a great deal of distrust. Who's asking the questions and why are they asking it? So one of the problems is we know that it happens. I mean, we can go through and we can qualitatively do interviews. You know, you don't have to scratch very far beneath the surface to get people to tell these stories. But to actually create a single figure and saying, you know, one out of three, one out of four, one out of six, every British Muslim experience, it's virtually impossible as it stands at the moment. But it also really indicates to the degree to which you know, different Muslim communities, British Muslim communities, have very different experiences. You know, the communities are divided by race, by class, by ethnicity. What it means to be a inner city minority Muslim in, you know, South London is going to be very different than what it means to be a rural Muslim living in the Welsh Valleys. I mean, these are kind of very different experiences. But what kind of draws a bridge between them is that wider discourse and the way that non-Muslims are encouraged to view Muslims in certain kinds of ways, either moderate or radical, either good or bad. And the question really then is, you know, how this definition of good or bad is manipulated by those with power and how it really helps to action these horrific things that happen on the ground.
Yes, I think this is a very important point because this is exactly what we have now. But once again, it's, in fact, if we compare the UK with other European countries, it's much better here than in many other countries. And we have to acknowledge the fact that there are countries where, for example, wearing the headscarf to be visible as a Muslim, for example, today in France, with, you know, the populist party, the Front National, is now heading. Even, you know, Marine Le Pen, the new chair of the party, is now even before and winning over Nicolas Sarkozy, the current president. And the situation is that she is targeting Islam as the enemy, exactly the same in the Netherlands. So the visibility of Islam and Muslims is problematic, and it nurtures a sense of, once again, they are colonizing us silently, they are more visible with their mask, with their clothes, with everything. Now, we have a sense also in the UK that things are changing. This country, which was perceived in Europe as the most welcoming, as for the visibility of this pluralistic cultural setting within, now is challenged by discourse on multiculturalism is failing, that we heard here, but also on the ground. So now the problem they also have is that all this could nurture a sense of victimhood among the Muslims. And this is exactly my point here. What we want to know, what would be your advice when you are a British Muslim citizen or a European Muslim citizen, and you are facing this, and you know it's not coming from nowhere, it's coming with something which is a strong ideological take on distracting the people from the real problems within the society when it comes to socioeconomic, you know, discriminations and class struggle and clashes, to something which is a cultural perception. What would be your advice when it comes to this?
Well, can I say, I always think it's quite amazing that it's a Tory government that acts more French. And by that I mean really rejects in some ways a more traditional British identity values, which was based on equality under the law in favor of a more kind of ethnocultural value, which is everyone must be French enough. And one could have imagined this coming in previous Labour governments. It's quite amazing that a Tory government that's so anti-continent and anti-EU actually embraces what is ultimately a very European, very continental way of viewing these things. Look, I think this is not an easy moment. And that's the reality. And, you know, all we can do is try and do right. And we can only try and do right in our everyday lives, which is, you know, kind of becoming engaged on issues in constructive ways, not in less emotional ways, not in less heartfelt ways, but in constructive ways. You know, I think it's a problematic moment with various debates going on with communities, but actually in some ways the fact that those debates are happening, this probably isn't the worst thing in the world. It shows that there is some real scope for debates and discussions. I hope that the kind of point of view that really tried to label people as being either radical or extremist or moderate or, you know, constructive, in some ways I hope that that era is slightly over with. with various organizations not being funded by the Tory government. So I hope that this kind of creates...
But it's still there. You agree it's still there. We still have this business of the bad Muslims and the good Muslims. And very often the good Muslims are perceived as the ex-Muslims. So we still have this problem.
Well, and it's I think it's worse. What's really the most disingenuous label, the thing about the label of good and bad is you're good if you are non-political or
exactly.
if you
yes.
Follow existing political realms. But you're bad if you in any way you want to be innovative or you don't agree with the status quo. Mm. And imagine applying that label to non-Muslims. Mm. And it really just goes to show the kind of there's a tendency to infantilize Muslims as though they somehow can't be politically responsible.
Yes.
And this really lies, I think, at the heart of the ignorance. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I don't mean that meanly. I don't mean people being ignorant because they're unable to know. But it's in some ways because they're not presented, non-Muslims aren't presented with the full picture of what's actually happening in Muslim communities. So if I publish something on the Guardian website or the New Statesman, it doesn't become about arguing the relative merits or demerits of my case. It becomes arguing about, you know, does the Quran automatically condone violence?
No,
does it condone domestic violence? Does it condone homophobia? So it really always is, as we said before, pulling back from the real issues that affect people in their everyday lives.
Which is exactly this, yes. Let me just very quickly two questions. The first one is about, you know, individuals. Would you advise any single, you know, women or men when they are facing hate crimes and they are, you know, insulted or whatever, do you advise them to go for suing the people, to say, no, I'm not going to let you do this, that this is my right and you are... you know, you are disrespectful towards my dignity.
It depends, obviously, on the level of what happens, because there are clearly incidents that people should immediately report to the police.
Okay.
I mean, there's no two ways about that, especially if there's any form of physical violence or threatened physical violence. But I think the other thing is we must remain morally courageous and strong against what is wrong. And sometimes that means confronting people, and sometimes that means helping to educate them, helping really to help them understand that what they're saying just isn't right.
Yes.
And, you know, I think there's something here about having space in one's heart for realizing that sometimes the reason why people are saying these things is because they've only read one newspaper or they only watched one TV program.
Yes.
And
so
you have to give them the scope in some ways to develop that in many ways.
In a few seconds, I'm sorry, because we are running out of time. I want to, you know, now Muslims are thinking about having institutions that are tackling Islamophobia. Do you think that it's good for Muslims to be involved in such, you know, or to create or to settle such organizations?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's crucial for empowerment and also for developing wider community relations.
Okay, thank you so much for that. I think that this was a very important discussion, first starting by understanding the whole atmosphere that we have today in Europe, in the UK, that is nurturing a sense of, you know, Islamophobia and racism against Muslims. And then it comes to the ground, and this is where it's quite important to get a better knowledge of Islam, but also for the Muslims to just try to confront the people, to ask for their rights, but at the same time also to institutionalize their presence by having institutions where they are saying, we're not going to go to let it be the way it is, because at the end of the day, it's our common future, which is important. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programmes, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Professor Jonathan Gittens-Mazur. Thank you so much for being with us today and with your input on a very critical discussion. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.